Welcome to Solo Sailing with Trev White. Today we're going to talk about boats. We can't go sailing without a vessel. I'm focusing on yachts because that's what I like doing. Sail yacht. I currently have a 43-foot Koopmans Ketch. It's built in alloy, made in Holland back in 1974, around that time. My previous yacht was also an older vessel. It was a Choi Lee Offshore 39, built in 1974. So both vessels were built in a time when boats were heavily built. They were also finished quite well. That's none of the sort of plastic fantastic type stuff, but they are a bit heavier. They're not as fast. They're built to last, and the workmanship was to a very high standard in my case. But what do you need when you're looking to buy a boat? So I've thought about this a lot. I've bought a couple of boats. I spend a lot of time looking at boats. I spend a lot of time helping mates and friends buy boats. I discuss a lot about aluminium boats now that I currently sail, live on, and explore around the world with an aluminium boat. As a solo sailor, and that's what I consider myself, I'm solo most of the time, or a good portion of the time. I have my girlfriend sailing with me some of the time. I have crew some of the time. But primarily I'm solo sailing. It's just the realities of life. So one of the considerations when you're sailing is how big is the vessel you require? Where are you going to sail to? I guess the first thing you got to ask yourself is, what is your desire for a sailboat? Is it to sail locally? Is it to sail around your country or area? Is it to cruise globally and explore the planet that we know? Is it to do it with your wife, your family, friends as well? There's lots of considerations. And then we get to things like, do you want a monohull or a catamaran? Do you even know the difference? Is it a consideration for you? Does it need to be a new boat? Can it be an old boat? These are all factors in purchasing a vessel. Do you have a preference for the type of boat? So many people buy, the plastic fantastics. They've got lots of beautiful boats getting built every day. And, plastic boats or fiberglass boats are mass-produced. They look wonderful. They're fantastic to live on in a harbour. They've got a lot of living space. They're not always as great to sail on, but a lot of them do a lot of sea miles. They're sailing around the world with families all the time. So, they're, in many cases, very, very seaworthy. They may not be as seaworthy as you would like in a significant storm. And that's one of the factors when sailing. You don't always get beautiful weather. Sometimes you find yourself in the biggest, nastiest gale on a lee shore, and you are sailing off that lee shore fighting to survive. Or you find yourself in the middle of the ocean, in the tail end of a cyclone, 500 to 600 kilometres, or rather miles from land. And there's no one out there to help you. You are just going to get flogged. Your boat has to survive. You have to be able to manage that boat so it will survive, so you can survive and your crew will survive, because no one's going to come and rescue you. They might, they might find you in a life raft if you've decided to do the dumb thing and step down into a life raft. The best course of action is to actually have a vessel that will survive in all but the worst possible situation. And that's how I view purchasing a boat. I think you need to buy a boat is going to survive a storm. It might even survive a grounding. It needs to be able to look after you, your family, friends, anybody else you've got on board. It needs to be able to do what you want it to achieve. I think most people listening to my podcast thinking about cruising, they have a desire to cruise. They're probably single, or maybe the missus, is sort of interested in sailing, so they're thinking, well, how do I do this by myself? And the reality is, there are so many men out there sailing by themselves or with mates when they can, or with the family when they can convince them to go sailing, are trying to make the most of their boats. And in many cases, they've purchased a vessel that is just simply too big. It might be okay when you've got, the wife and four kids on board. They can work the lines, they can help you get in and out of the marinas, tie up to the fuel dock, anchor, get the dinghies on and off. But in many cases, the boat's just too big. My boat is, in reality, probably too big for me. It's 44 foot. I'm often sailing it solo. Coming in to marinas and tying up to fuel docks is a major pain in the ass. I have made the most embarrassing, spectacle of myself often. Only recently I was tying up to Pua fuel dock. There was a current running. I was trying to get in there. There's another boat. I'm trying to maneuver around that boat. I'm trying to get a line over a pylon, a spring, so I could, you know, hook it on and then reverse back. Completely blew it out my ass. And my boat's swinging there. It's not doing anything pretty. Luckily, some guy on the other side of the fuel dock's wife took my line, managed to get her around the pylon. And then I managed to, you know, drive my boat forward onto the spring. And, you know, the boat came into the dock. And then, you know, she took my stern line. But otherwise, I would have had to release that line, go off, start again. And, you know, the fuel dock's competitive. So other boats, which are more maneuverable, you know, big stink boats, would have got in there, taken up the dock, and I would have been waiting again. I'd already been waiting for half an hour for another stink boat. And they take a lot more fuel than I do. You know, I'm only taking on 300 litres. In most cases, I'm only taking on a third of that. So I wait around a while these big stink boats fill up. You know, it might take on 5,000 litres. So, yeah, you know, it could even be an hour. But that's the most difficult part of sailing or boating, is going into marinas and tying up on docks, and particularly if there's a current running. You know, like when I was going into Apua Marina, the dock was quite tight. It was a shit day. Yeah, you know, the wind was blowing, the current was running. And, you know, I managed to talk to one of the attendants. She was on a workboat, and I asked her to, you know, be ready to push my boat if I overran the berth. So I had to come around a corner and drive into the berth. But because I had a current running from behind me, a wind coming from, you know, my starboard side, you know, I would have had to push really hard in reverse and then hard in forward to get into my berth. And there was a beautiful $700,000 Hans 50-footer in the next berth. You know, I had plenty of fenders out, but they looked pretty bloody worried, and I looked a little bit green myself. So the lady who was on the workboat, yeah, she just gave me a decent push with the rib, and I gave my vessel a decent bit of a squirt and got into the pen, got some lines on. It's not pretty, but it works, and you've got to be careful. You know, you don't want to damage someone's boat, don't want to damage your own boat, don't want to damage marina infrastructure. It impacts your insurance. It impacts, you know, future friendships. Yeah, you might not get to return if you make too much of a mess of yourself. So that is one of the considerations buying a boat. Many people buy a boat that is just simply too big. They overestimate the amount of people that want to go sailing with them. Yeah, you know, I didn't realise when I first bought a boat, I had an offshore 39. It was a Choi Lee. Beautiful boat, fiberglass, sloop. I got it back to, I sailed from the Gold Coast in Queensland around the bottom of Australia back to Perth. And I was living on this boat, I was sailing it. And for the first few weeks, I had mates coming out sailing regularly. We'd sail out to Rottnest Island. They'd give me a hand to get in out of the pen. It was easy. And then, you know, people had their own things going on. They didn't want to go sailing. They didn't want to go sailing after work. You know, I just wanted to go for a sail, run down the coast. And I was in a berth that had pylons. So I had four pylons up against a concrete dock. It's a good berth, you know, when you've got all your lines on and your springs on. Storm comes through. You're not, you know, getting knocked up on a berth. You're not rubbing up against, you know, a floating dock. You're in between four pylons with multiple ropes, and I quite like that. Very difficult to get into these berths by yourself. It's difficult to get out of them by yourself. Back then, you know, this is going back 25 years, I had to improvise a way of getting in and out of the berth by myself, and that was my introduction to solo sailing. You know, it's a bit daunting at first when you haven't done it, and you've got to get out of your berth. You're trying to get all your sails up. You're trying to make sure you don't run into anybody. You make sure you're not running into the reefs. Perth's got plenty of reef. And then when you come back in, you've got to get everything down into the marina, into your berth, and tie up without making too much of a mess of it. And I found out then that my boat was, you know, it was quite a large vessel. It was very wide in the beam. Yeah, it was a handful for a single person. And I would say, as a single sailor, depending on how many people you want to go sailing with, 35 foot is a very good size boat. It's quite manageable. It sails well. You can sail these things all around the world. There's plenty of boats in that 35 foot range that are very capable ocean going cruising vessels. That's not what everybody wants. A lot of people want, you know, the classic 50 foot Beneteau or Jeannot cruising boat. You know, they're wonderful boats to live on. You know, some of them are almost 6 metres wide at the stern. You know, they're big canoe stern boats. Got lots of living space. They're fantastic downstairs. Some of them are very airy, and they're great to live on. The wife loves them. You know, they look beautiful. And that's the problem. You know, a lot of people purchase a boat based on what their missus wants. And I would caution anybody looking at a boat is buy a boat based on cruising performance and capability. Do not let your missus pick your boat. You know, let her pick the soft furnishings, the crockery, the cutlery, the glasses, bed covers, you know, color coordinated tools if it needs to be that way. Don't let her pick the vessel. You need to pick the vessel that you can sail, that you're comfortable maintaining and operating, and you know, she needs to be able to deal with that. You know, if you buy a vessel that she's picked because she loves the look of it, it has a big bathroom, that's not going to help you when you're trying to manage this vessel. A 50-footer is a big boat. It's a significant vessel to manage, particularly some of these boats that are at least, you know, 5 and 6 meters wide. And some of them, you know, I think that's about as wide as they're going to get, but, you know, who knows? You're talking catamarans? A lot of catamarans are 8 meters wide. In many cases, they're more manageable. You know, you've got twin motors, so you can walk these things into a pen, a little bit like a motorboat with twin engines. But, you know, catamarans are a whole different kettle of fish. You know, like, I like catamarans. I love the living space of a catamaran. I don't particularly like the sailing performance of a catamaran. But if you're going sailing with a number of people, you know, taking your kids out, you're going to do a world trip, catamarans are fantastic. You know, they're a lot more boat than a monohull. They provide a significant amount of living space. They've got quite a bit of storage space. But a catamaran is a planing hull. And this comes to the situation where people overfill their catamarans with crap that they don't really need for sailing. A catamaran and a monohull boat is not a home. Sorry, it is not a house. It can be a home, but it is not a house. It is a sailing vessel. Catamarans were designed of, you know, performance cruising boats or cruising catamarans. Oldest explorers in the world have been using some form of catamaran, the ancient Polynesians. The Warham is based off some of these early cruising catamarans, and yeah, they've got great performance. They can also carry a lot of weight, but if you put a lot of weight in them, their performance drops off, you know, significantly. It's the same with a monohull. You know, if you get a lightweight racer cruiser monohull and you load it up full of crap, washing machines, dryers, you know, bread makers, every possible gadget that, you know, is known to man that you have at home, in your house, and you want to turn your boat into your home, like your house, then your boat is going to turn into a big fat slug that doesn't sail very well. And you won't have any room. Plus, you've got all this stuff that is going to fly around in the first gale. So you need to pick a boat that has good sailing performance, is capable of sailing where you want to go, but more importantly, it's capable of getting you home alive. And the wife and the family, depending on who you want to go sailing with, you need to be able to operate this vessel by yourself, as a couple, or with the family or friends. And I think that's one of the considerations when you're buying a boat. That needs to be the first thing you think about, is how am I going to manage this? More importantly, how am I going to manage this boat by myself? When the missus gets bored and pisses off and the kids have grown up and want to do their own thing with their friends, my friends are experiencing, or I just can't get crew. You know, crew have promised they're going to turn up and then they just don't turn up, or the airline cancels their flights. You know, there's a crisis in the world. You know, life happens and you can't get crew and you are in the middle of Fiji and you need to go somewhere. You know, you're trying to get to Vanuatu to meet the wife who's going to fly back. And, you know, you've got a 4 or 5 day journey. You know, you're almost in the situation where you need to solo sail. And that's typically how a lot of people, you know, do their first solo sail, is they find themselves in a situation where they've got no choice and their boat isn't prepared for it, or their boat is too big. You know, I meet couples who are sailing 70 and 80 foot vessels. You don't need that much space unless you've got a really big family. You know, it might meet the needs of your ego. If you're on a couple, anything bigger than a 50-foot cruising boat, then, you know, I think you're mad. And you certainly don't need the space. You know, if you know, love performance, then, you know, yeah, maybe a 60 or 70-foot racer cruiser that can do 20 knots downwind on a planing hull, go for it. You know, you've obviously got all that racing experience and that's what you love. But if you're a person who's getting into cruising and you don't have years and years of racing experience, then you need to find a boat that you can manage, and manage potentially by yourself. And I believe that 50 foot is as big as you should go. There's also a lot more boats in that length. It's a very common length in a production vessel. You can get bow thrusters, you can get stern thrusters. That helps you get in and out of berths, up against fuel docks, even picking up moorings at times. And I see people that really don't understand the whole process of, you know, managing their boat, and they're using bow thrusters inappropriately, working the thing to death, when they could have just sailed a bit more appropriately and got their vessel to a point where they could then just use a bow thruster to push alongside. But yeah, that's a story for another day. So once you've sort of worked out what size I need, where I'm going to go, the sort of equipment I'm going to take, am I doing lots of diving or am I just going light and fast? Am I buying this boat to sail from America across the Pacific to Australia, then I'm going to sell it and go back to work, or am I buying this boat to sail around the world for the next 5 years? You know, they're both very different boats, in my opinion. Then you need to be looking at what sort of material do I want the boat made out of. You know, the most common is fiberglass. There's lots of fiberglass boats. The older boats are thicker and heavier. The newer boats are thinner, and you know, they're a very different boat. They're lighter, they're faster, there's a lot more of them. Then there's aluminium, which is what I have. It's light, it's strong. It's also probably more expensive in many production boats today. It's not as common, but there's a lot of French boats and Dutch boats that are being built in aluminium, even some Australian boats. There's also timber. There's lots of timber boats. There's traditional timber carvel hulls. There's also, you know, different forms of laminate. You know, they're quite common laminated boats, and they're finished in, you know, fiberglass encasing. And some of them are fantastic boats. And there's a whole pile of combinations between the fiberglass, the timber, foam cores. You also get steel. You know, steel boats are quite common. They're very strong, they're heavy. So, you know, you might go from 12-ton boat like mine, which at 44 foot, the same boat might be 30-ton if it's made out of steel. Just depends on the manufacturing. If you buy a steel spray, which is a big, heavy, four-keel boat, quite beamy, you know, very livable, very sturdy in a storm, quite a slug though. It's, you know, it's not a fast boat. It's flat out at 5 knots. For the same sort of length, it's going to be heavy. It's probably 25-30 ton, but it's going to be a good boat in heavy weather. But it's not going to be a good boat when you want to turn a speed. So everything's a trade-off. And there's a whole range of different materials coming out now. You know, they're designing different processes all the time. For a cruising boat, I don't want new age, newfangled processes. I want boats that are proven with time, that are reliable, that are easy to fix, that don't need to be fixed terribly often. All boats need to be fixed regularly. Like, trust me, it doesn't matter whether you're sailing a 50-year-old aluminium boat like myself, or whether you're sailing a 2024 Beneteau beautiful production boat straight out of the shop. You are going to be fixing lots of things on those boats. New boats are just as bad as old boats. There's just as many gremlins. A boat that's probably done 2 or 3 years with a cruiser will have a lot less gremlins, because the first year or two, there's a lot of things to fix and improve on and change. And as a boat gets older, there's lots of things to fix because they're wearing out, they've got corrosion, they've got salt, gets into everything. So, you know, all of these things are considerations for sailing. So, you know, that's my general discussion with someone when they're looking at a boat, just to make them think about it. You know, I see the single biggest problem is people buy a vessel which is just too big for their requirements. You know, they've got way too much boat for what they need. They don't have enough people to manage that vessel. You know, if it's just them and the wife and they're on a 70-footer and it's a big slab-sided vessel that's got a lot of windage, it's not very manoeuvrable, hasn't got enough in the way of thrusters or propulsion, then it's going to be very difficult to take it in and moor it. And then the other consideration you've got is finding a berth for some of these boats that are of a significant length. I know in Australia, anything over 50 foot isn't common. You're almost getting into mini super yacht territory. So I would say in Australia, 50 foot is, you know, the maximum common length. I'd say it's probably similar in New Zealand. And, you know, America might be different. You know, there's a lot more bigger boats. Europe's the same. There's more bigger boats over there. But you need to be considering where you're going to sail. And if you're not, you know, in Monaco or Greece or, you know, parts of America where there's lots of berths, one of the biggest considerations is where are you going to keep this boat? In some places, it's almost impossible to get a berth. So if you're getting a boat that's too big, you might not be able to get a berth and you might be limited to a mooring. And, you know, then you've got this massive boat on a mooring and you've got to make sure your mooring is just oversized to protect your investment, because it is a big investment. It's probably the next biggest investment next to your house for many people. And, you know, you have a lot of money tied up. You have a lot of sweat equity tied up in these, you know, these vessels. You need to protect it. You need to be able to use it. Like if you're on a mooring, and it takes you half an hour just to get out to your mooring to do a simple job, or you're just not going to do it. I like to be in a berth. You know, I like to be able to come and go to the boat store, go to Bunnings, you know, go to the supermarket. This is for Australia. If I'm doing work on my boat, if I'm not sailing. When I'm sailing, I don't like to be in marinas. I like to be on the anchor. I find it more comfortable, generally. Yeah, it's particularly more comfortable in the heat, because I'm swinging around, I'm getting better access to the breeze. You know, if I'm in a marina, I'm not. You know, you're stuck in one direction. But getting a berth is a significant consideration for the type of vessel. And the type of vessel that you need to think long and hard about. You need to give that a lot of thought. You know, like you need to create a spreadsheet of all your needs and desires, people that are going to go sailing with you, where you want to sail, what you want to do, how much gear you want to take, and that's just a starting point. And then we start to get into the technical aspects, and we can talk about that on another day. But I hope I've given you something to think about, because I know a lot of people who are listening are thinking about buying a boat and the considerations for what boat they need. And I mean, you can talk to anybody. Everybody's got a different opinion. You know, I've got my own opinions on buying boats. I've lived on boats for over 25 years. I've sailed all sorts of boats, you know, timber, glass, steel, aluminium, different types of plastic boats. You know, I've sailed catamarans and monohulls. I've sailed them in every type of environment, from Antarctica to the tropics, a whole range of different places around the world. So I've got a fairly good idea of the type of boats I like. And, you know, I generally like a boat that is reasonably fast in the open ocean so I can cover distances. But it also has to be incredibly seaworthy so it can survive a storm. And I need it to be able to carry a reasonable amount of gear. I don't want a boat that is a lightweight, you know, more racer than cruiser. I want a boat that is more cruiser than racer. But I want it to have a turn of speed. And I want it to be very well built with redundant systems so that if something goes wrong, I've got a backup built into the boat's, you know, structural systems. So sort of how I think. I'm limited to a certain type of boat. I mean, I like boats. I mean, there's a boat I was looking at the other day. It was a Pogo 12.5. It parked next to me in a pen. It's almost 6 meters across the stern. It took a whole double pen by itself. So it's paying twice as much now for that berth because it's taking a catamaran berth. Essentially, like, you know, where you would normally put two monohulls, it's now one monohull. So, you know, they're paying twice as much. You know, that's a fact. A boat like mine's about, you know, $10,000 a year on average for a lot of marinas if you're outside the major cities. But, you know, these guys are now paying 20, unless they can get a, you know, in berth. Like what catamarans prefer, they're on the end, like a T-berth, I suppose you'd call it. That way it's cheaper for them. That's why you always see the catamarans out in the end. But, you know, when monos start doing that, it ruins the system. But, you know, these boats are incredibly fast. It's primarily a race boat that's turned into a cruiser. And, you know, this thing will do 25 knots downwind on a spinnaker run. You know, that's a fast boat. You know, it's also a handful. So you need a crew if you're going to, you know, sail that thing, unless you're a very capable solo sailor or a very capable couple, and you're probably never really getting the performance out of it, because as a cruiser you tend to sail, you know, with some conservative, you know, you're not trying to smash your boat all the time. You're trying to sail it with a conservative fashion, so you'll get there, and more importantly you'll get back from where you're going to. You know, if you take your boat and race it like you're in a short coastal race, but you're doing 1,000 nautical miles, you know, your boat is just going to get loaded up everywhere and things are going to fail, and then you're going to be trying to fix them in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there's people who've got very deep pockets and they drive their boats really hard, and, you know, but you still got to, you know, get those parts flowing in, or you've got to have a boat that is overbuilt everywhere so it doesn't fail. But I typically sail my boat conservatively. I try to be fast, but I sail conservatively, so I'm going to be able to get home. But anyway, I think I've chatted enough about the initial thought process of a boat, and we can go into a lot more detail then. Thanks for joining me, and safe sailing.